Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
It's going to be extremely difficult to hold a $1,000 dividend in the next couple of years if oil prices dip.
State lawmakers weigh in on next month's legislative session. We'll discuss what to expect. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 23rd. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, Fairbanks residents can expect a white Christmas, and then...
back into the freezer, so to speak, with temperatures going back in the 30s and even 40s below.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. Next year's legislative session is less than a month away, and lawmakers have big plans for the year ahead. It's a chance for legislators to pick up on initiatives left unfinished last year and also take on new challenges. And there's a lot to discuss, from a possible gas pipeline to Governor Mike Dunleavy's promise to deliver a plan to stabilize the state's finances. Alaska Public Media legislative reporter Eric Stone is here to talk us through what legislators are looking for in the year ahead. Eric, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So what is on lawmakers' minds?
Well, Wesley, lawmakers are looking at a tight budget this year, just like they were last year. Oil doesn't make up as much of the budget as it used to, only about a quarter of the unrestricted portion of the state budget, which is, you know, what lawmakers fight over every year. Funny enough, permanent fund earnings are likely to be about 2/3 of the unrestricted budget this year, which if you step back and think about it, that's really something. But oil is still really, really important, a quarter of the budget or so, and each dollar in the price of oil is $25 to $35 million in the state budget. And oil prices are low right now, so a tight budget.
So it's not looking like there's going to be a lot of presents under the Christmas tree this year.
That is correct, Wesley. Not tons of money for new initiatives, you know, capital projects, and so on. I mean, there will be a capital budget, but it won't be gigantic. I would definitely not count on a large permanent fund dividend this year. Governor Dunleavy, as he always does, proposed dividends around $3,600, but I would expect the final figure to be quite a bit smaller. When I spoke with Senator Burt Stedman earlier this month, he said he was expecting it to look similar to this year's $1,000 dividend, maybe even less.
It's going to be extremely difficult to hold a $1,000 dividend in the next couple of years if oil prices dip in, if they stay where they're at and go lower, particularly if they get in the high 50s. We've got to make payroll.
And right now, North Slope oil prices are just a little over $60.
Okay, so probably another year of low dividends. What else are lawmakers hoping to address this session?
Well, a big thing I've been hearing a lot from lawmakers is preparations for a gas line. The Alaska LNG project, that's the 800-mile pipeline and export terminal that would take North Slope gas south, that's nearing a final decision on whether it'll go forward, and that will probably be a big focus in the legislative session this year. Senator Bill Willikowski, he's an Anchorage Democrat, he says state lawmakers may need to take a look at how the state calculates oil and gas taxes. He says he wants to avoid a situation where companies are able to reduce their oil and gas taxes by deducting the money it costs to build the gas line.
We're seeing the impacts of that with the Willow Project and how ConocoPhillips is spending $1 billion, $1.5 billion, and then writing off hundreds of millions of dollars off of their production taxes. The same situation exists with the natural gas pipeline.
Another thing for lawmakers to consider, whether it's this session or one in the future, is the question of whether the state should actually put up some of its own money to invest in the pipeline. The state could invest as much as a quarter of it, and Willikowski says that's worth looking at.
Obviously, there's risk involved. If there are cost overruns, the state could be on the hook on potential costs. At the same time, I think most people in retrospect would agree that the state probably should have taken an interest in TAPS, for example.
TAPS is, of course, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, and there's kind of a tightrope for lawmakers to walk here. Most would like to see a gas line built, and for it to be built, it would have to be profitable. But at the same time, lawmakers have to make sure they don't wind up, you know, making a bad deal for the state. Here's Senate President Gary Stevens, a Kodiak Republican.
You know, really, there's just two elements. First is we want to make sure that we encourage development of Alaska's natural resources. by the industry. And on the other hand, we want to make sure that we protect Alaskans and that we get our fair share out of our natural resources. So that's the dichotomy we're facing, is how to accomplish those two things.
So yeah, that balancing act will probably be a big focus this year.
What about education? You know, that's been a big topic the past few years. Schools around the state are still looking for more cuts, even after lawmakers approved more funding last year. So what are you expecting, Eric? Should we expect it to dominate the session again this year?
I don't think so. There will certainly be some talk about it, maybe some changes around the edges, but I'm not expecting it to be quite as dominant an issue this year as it was last year. I am hearing some lawmakers would like to take this session to consider inflation-proofing school funding. That's one thing Willikowski and independent Sitka representative Rebecca Himshute both mentioned to me, but I wouldn't expect it to be a big focus, and you know, if I were running a school district, I don't think I would count on lots of extra money this year.
Just a couple months ago, Western Alaska was devastated by the remnants of Typhoon Halong. Recovery work has been scaled back a lot for the winter, and lots of folks are still displaced. Is there anything the legislature can do on that front?
That's a question I put to Representative Nellie Jimmy. She's a Democrat from Tuxuk Bay, and she says she'd like the legislature to beef up public safety funding for Western Alaska so that people in the region can better prepare and respond to emergencies. She says it's just been heartbreaking to see the toll the storm took all over the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta.
That was very hard to see, but it just opened my eyes that we do need an emergency response for a rural, just like they do in the urban areas.
So she'd like to see more money for village public safety officers and other public safety investments in rural Alaska.
Finally, Eric, Governor Mike Dunleavy says he's going to unveil a fiscal plan next month. Do you think lawmakers will make any progress this year?
Well, a fiscal plan requires a lot of hard choices and tough votes, and this year is an election year. And yeah, this is an issue that lawmakers have been trying to crack for a long time. Senator Willikowski, who I talked with earlier, he has a few things he'd like to see to stabilize the state's finances, beefing up oil taxes, a corporate tax bill, actually, that Dunleavy vetoed this year, a few other things. But, you know, it's been a tough nut to crack. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe says he would support a cap on state spending, a constitutional amendment saying that there would be a dividend every year, and he says he wants the state to raise revenue through resource development. But he points, you know, to a previous task force. He, you know, there was a 2021 fiscal policy working group, and Kevin McCabe says there are some good ideas in their conclusions that are worth revisiting.
That plan seems to have always been out there. So yes, I would hope that we would take that entire thing, or at least the major elements of it, and take another hard look at it.
But whether lawmakers can actually get it done this year, that much is unclear.
Well, Eric Stone is Alaska Public Media's legislative reporter down in Juneau. Eric, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
A years-old mistake by the Alaska Department of Motor Vehicles voter registration program has endangered the citizenship of two prominent Kodiak residents and could cause them to be deported, according to a newly filed lawsuit in Alaska federal court. The Alaska Beacon reports that the suit, filed Thursday by Eva Benedelova and Pavel Benedela in the U.S. District Court for the District of Alaska, says U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services canceled their citizenship oath ceremony because they were mistakenly registered to vote in Alaska when they updated their driver's licenses in 2022. Alaska law allows people who update their driver's licenses or get new ones to automatically register themselves to vote. It's supposed to be an opt-in system, but in 2022, according to a timeline of events provided by the Alaska Division of Elections, an update to the DMV system caused online transactions with the DMV to automatically opt in people who didn't select either yes or no. The Division of Elections admitted the error involving the Kodiak couple, apologized, and wrote a letter saying that Benedelova and Benedela did nothing wrong. The couple never voted and immediately canceled their voter registration when they discovered the problem. According to the complaint, the delay in the Kodiak couple's citizenship application appears to be due in part to a federal policy implemented by USCIS in May of this year that requires the agency's headquarters to approve all matters where an applicant has been registered to vote in the United States. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Juneau residents hit the slopes this week to celebrate the solstice.
Whew, I made it. The days are going to start getting longer. I feel a lot better. time for a party.
That's ahead. Stay with us. An Utqiagvik woman has been charged with 6 felony charges for allegedly murdering her father. North Slope police officers responded to a call last week from an unidentified female. The caller said she had done, quote, something bad and requested assistance. According to court documents, officers responded to the residence and found the victim, 57-year-old Jens Leavitt, lying on his back and unresponsive. Leavitt was later pronounced dead at a local hospital from multiple stab wounds. Officers also found the suspect, later identified as 18-year-old Natalie Lauren Marie Leavitt, the victim's daughter. According to the arresting officer's statements in court documents, Leavitt had locked herself in a bathroom, refused to leave, and threatened to stab the officers through the door. She later complied with officers. Once she was in custody, Leavitt allegedly told officers that she started drinking the previous day and continued drinking until she said she got into an argument with her father over household chores. The argument escalated and became physical. Leavitt admitted to stabbing her father several times. She admitted to calling the police dispatch after her uncle arrived at the house about 20 minutes after the stabbing. Leavitt was indicted on 2 counts of murder in the second degree, 3 counts of third degree assault, and 1 count of terroristic threatening in the third degree. Leavitt is in custody at the Highland Mountain Correctional Center. Her bail is set at $1 million. Leavitt's arraignment was set for 10 a.m. today at the Utqiagvik Courthouse. Her attorney said he would be entering a not guilty plea on Leavitt's behalf. The cold snap that set in earlier this month around the interior will give way to above zero temperatures and heavy snow Tuesday night through Christmas Day. But as KUEC's Tim Ellis reports, after the storm passes through, frigid weather will return.
The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning for the interior that'll take effect Tuesday night. But until then, Fairbanks meteorologist Bobby Bianco says temperatures around the interior will remain very chilly.
It's definitely going to be cold through, I'd say, Tuesday. So we'll be having temperatures in the 20s and 30s below, even some 40s below around most of the interior.
Bianco says the cold will then give way to warmer temperatures, along with snow accumulation that definitely will make for a white Christmas.
We'll probably be around 3 to 5 degrees above zero on Wednesday, and that'll be the same thing for Thursday. And as we head towards Christmas Eve, we will see a warm-up, but that will also come with some snow, and it will be some heavy snow.
He says the flakes will begin falling Tuesday night and continue through Wednesday, and possibly into Christmas Day. He expects up to 10 inches of accumulation around the interior. The Weather Service has issued a winter storm watch that'll be effective from 6 a.m. Tuesday to 9 a.m. Thursday. And Bianco urges motorists to drive with caution during that time.
Definitely just be careful traveling. It's going to be a big travel day, Christmas Eve, even Christmas Day. It's not going to be blowing snow, but just from driving, there might be pretty poor visibilities, especially on the highways.
After Christmas, temperatures will begin falling again.
Back into the freezer, so to speak, with temperatures going back in the 30s and even 40s below to the end of the week and into next weekend.
A stubborn high-pressure ridge that's been parked over the state for the past few weeks is causing the frigid temperatures. Bianco says it's funneling cold air from the Arctic straight into the interior.
That's why we've been so cold lately, and there hasn't really been a whole lot to move this big, big ridge of high pressure out of the way. It's been super strong.
The Weather Service models suggest the high-pressure ridge may remain in place well into January. For KUAC News, I'm Tim Ellis in Delta Junction.
9 seismic monitoring stations across the Aleutians lost federal funding earlier this year and were set to shut down in November. But last-minute negotiations could keep them running. KUCB's Sophia Stewart Rossi reports the stations are key for quickly issuing tsunami warnings in Alaska.
The Alaska Earthquake Center is currently in negotiations with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration to restore funding for 9 seismic stations. In late September, NOAA told the center it would no longer fund their real-time seismic data flow to the National Tsunami Warning Center, a service the federal organization had been funding for decades. In a statement in mid-December, a NOAA spokesperson said the federal government was working on a, quote, potential funding mechanism to maintain the stations. A spokesperson for the Alaska Earthquake Center said they expect the funding by mid-January. Dave Snyder coordinates tsunami warnings at the National Tsunami Warning Center in Palmer. He says scientists can make better decisions faster with more seismic stations. Snyder says the speed of earthquake detection is key to tsunami detection.
We're built for speed, so we have to do that part very quickly. And our aim is to get that first message out within 5 minutes of detecting the earthquake.
Several of the stations sit in the Aleutians, a region where large earthquakes are very common as the Pacific Plate slides beneath the North American Plate. Snyder says the Aleutian seismic stations matter most for nearby coastal communities, where every minute counts when detecting a tsunami. He says how quickly a tsunami could hit a community depends on the earthquake's strength, depth, and exact location.
For a really strong nearby quake, if there's one that's happening right along your coastline, it could be immediate.
Snyder says losing the 9 seismic stations in the Aleutians could delay earthquake detection by up to a minute.
Earthquake signals travel out and away from that epicenter really quickly. So even if there's one sensor is out in your community, there's going to be another one behind it and another one behind that.
One of the 9 seismic stations at risk of shutting down is in Unalaska, a city with a population of more than 4,000 people that sits right along the coast facing the Bering Sea. Here's Ben Knowles, Unalaska's fire chief and director of emergency services.
We want good funding for these agencies that help communities like ours with early warning and early detection. That's extremely important for us.
Knowles says there's a whole process when a large earthquake strikes in the region.
The National Tsunami Warning Center has an entire center of people that are dedicated to monitoring these things. We also partner with places like the Alaska Volcano Observatory, the Alaska Earthquake Center, the National Weather Service. And so they all work hand in hand.
If there is a tsunami threat, Noel says the city alerts residents through the Nixel system, social media, and sound sirens if necessary. KUCB also broadcasts emergency information over the radio. Alerts are also notified on the FEMA app, at tsunami.gov, and through NOAA Weather Radio. Whether the Aleutian seismic stations stay on or not, Snyder is confident his team can keep communities safe. But he says,
there's always room for more data, and any scientist would never disagree with that.
The Alaska earthquake staff are hopeful they'll have the funding by mid-January. In the meantime, the University of Alaska Fairbanks is currently funding the stations so that earthquakes in the island region are detected quickly. With KUCB in Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Unclaimed dogs rescued from communities affected by ex-Typhoon Halong are now entering the adoption systems in Matsu and Anchorage. The Matsu Sentinel reports that a total of 218 dogs were rescued by state officials and volunteers, and while most stayed in Anchorage, 10 were relocated to the Matsu. As of last week, 5 of those dogs were unclaimed and would be entering the Matsu adoption system. As of last week, it was not yet confirmed which Matsu adoption group would take any of the remaining dogs. The dogs, 3 adults and 2 puppies, are mostly what shelter officials described as typical village dogs, being a mix of small Alaska Husky and so-called no-grow mixes, accustomed to spending most of their lives outdoors. One additional dog relocated to the Matsu, Ruger, was described by officials as, quote, a pain in the butt because he's huge and ball crazy. Ruger is a happy purebred lab whose owner has claimed him. He remains at the shelter until she secures housing where she can keep him. Owners can call the Pet Help hotline at 907-615-8904 or find more information at the Typhoon Halong Dog Rescue website, alaskatyphoondogs.org. After more than 16 years as a staple at Juneau's State Office Building, a local musician has played his last theater organ concert. In a holiday-themed show on Friday, TJ Duffy said goodbye to a packed audience filled with longtime listeners and soon-to-be regulars. KTOO's Jamie Deep has more.
A crowd of people gather in the State Office Building on a frigid afternoon. Sunshine streams through windows as they listen, and some sing along with classic Christmas carols performed on a nearly century-old Kimball Theater organ. Ooh. TJ Duffy mans the keys of the massive organ, using his hands and feet to control pedals that play various pipes, wind instruments, and drums behind a nearby glass display case. Duffy moved to Juneau in 2008, but heard about the rare organ even before arriving. He says he had to clear a couple of hoops before the state approved him to perform.
I contacted the State Museum, who owned it, and they had to interview me and vet me to make sure, you know, that I knew what I was doing, because it is a museum piece. And they said, sure, go ahead.
In 2009, Duffy started joining another organist and performing on Fridays at noon. He kept it up for more than 16 years. He says some of the younger audience members are one of his favorite parts of performing.
I used to have what I called my cult following of preschoolers. They would come over here, they'd take their jackets and their boots off, they'd eat their peanut butter and jelly, and then they would get up and dance. So I would specifically save my danceable music for when they were ready to dance. And then they would rush the organ.
After concerts, Duffy typically gives an organ tour where he lets children check out the organ and play a few notes. Friday's concert was no different. He says it's a way to get them interested in music.
The State Museum prefers I don't, but I'm a big believer that if you want your kids to be a musician, you have to put musical instruments in their hand and take them to musical events. You know, because everybody says, how can I get my kid interested in piano? Get him a piano. Let him play it. Let him see people playing it.
Runa Curry went to the concert with her mom. It was a first for both of them.
I like the sounds, because and then you look in the case and there's like drums that go with it too. There's so many different like instruments that go with the organ.
She says she's sad that it's Duffy's last performance, but wants to come back for future concerts with other musicians. Duffy says his last concert coincides with his retirement from the state's law department. The years have also taken their toll.
It's affected my hearing, and my abilities are decreasing, so no more public.
There are still two other performers who will continue the Friday concerts, but it's unclear how much longer that will go on. The organ is near the end of its usable life, and it would cost $250,000 to ship it to Portland, Oregon for repairs. On top of that, Duffy says it's difficult to get young people in Juneau to play the organ.
There's not that many organs in Juneau. Organists are a dying breed. AI starts manufacturing music now, you know, so this organ may very well be in its final days. And I want everybody to know that.
Now he hopes to leave the state and pursue his other interest, poker.
I'm actually hoping to move to Las Vegas this summer and check out professional poker. I love playing poker. That's my other passion, next to music.
Despite Duffy's departure and the organ's uncertain future, another concert is scheduled for this Friday at noon at the state office building, with another regular at the Keys. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deeb.
The darkest day of the year has officially passed. Now, the days are growing brighter. In Juneau, many residents celebrated winter solstice with a Light the Night Nordic Ski Club gathering at the Mendenhall Campground. KTUO's Alex Solomon brings us this story from the trail.
The sun sets just after 3 p.m., casting a stripe of pink and gold alpenglow on the sheer peaks that tower above Mendenhall Glacier. Marianne Park kicks into her cross-country skis and sets off on the groomed trail.
It's just absolutely beautiful.
Ice crystals cling to her face as she returns from taking a few laps around the 3-kilometer loop.
It's really fun skiing between the lights. They got them strung all the way up around the big loop.
She's here to support the Juneau Nordic Ski Club, which organized the event as a fundraiser. As twilight falls, the temperature drops. String lights and ice lanterns illuminate the trail, shadowy figures of snow-laden evergreens, and skiers bundled up in warm layers. Although meteorological winter began December 1st with the change in weather, astronomical winter officially began December 21st on the solstice, when Earth's northern hemisphere tilts its furthest from the sun. The North Pole is shrouded in all-day darkness. The South Pole is bathed in all-day light. Tristan Knudsen-Lombardo is the executive director of the Juneau Nordic Ski Club. He clicks on dozens of battery-powered tea lights for paper lanterns.
It's to light up the darkest night and look forward to brighter days ahead.
For him, the darkest day signals the ski season, but it means more than that.
Solstice has always been such a social occasion for me, so I think it's just one more opportunity to gather.
He says volunteers run the club and groom trails around Juneau for youth teams to practice and race on. That benefits Juneau's wider cross-country community of all ages.
On like a good winter and a good day, we could have like close to 40 kilometers at different sites around town. Yeah.
Finley Hightower makes his way to a tent with homemade cookies and hot chocolate for sale.
Chocolate, cookies.
He's a recent graduate from Juneau Douglas High School, Yada Akathle, and was on the Nordic ski team his senior year.
My younger brothers are still on the Nordic ski team, and I really enjoyed it last year. It's a great experience. It's great fitness. It's just awesome overall.
Hightower's here to support the team and join in the festivities. Clint Farr sells finger and toe warmers to the masses as a volunteer. He says winter solstice is a sigh of relief.
It's the place in the year where I'm like, whew, I made it. The days are going to start getting longer. I feel a lot better. It's time for a party.
As twilight turns to night, people pack in like penguins. They sip hot drinks, ski the loop, and socialize. Farr calls it a resounding success. On Skis in Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone, Jamie Deep, and Alex Solomon in Juneau, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Sophia Stewart-Rossi in Unalaska. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.